H, yeah, S, yeah, C, yeah, oh, 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 oh.
Hey everybody, this is Joe from Home Studio Corner, and it's been a while since I've done a blog post on Ask Joe. I've started doing those more in the forums, answering questions there, and recently I sent out an email reminding my email subscribers about Ask Joe, and I got a ton of questions. Bombarded with questions, which is great. I'm really happy to have all those questions and to answer those, but I realized it would take me way too long to type out individual answers to each. I thought I would just read through them and answer them in audio format, more of a podcast type of thing. So I've done this before via video months and months ago, and it's been a while, so I want to go through these now, and let's see if we can't make some headway and answer some of these questions. So I've got around 20 to 30 or so questions, so I'm just going to try to blow through these. See if we can get them answered. All right, the first one is from Troy, and the subject is 48K versus 44.1. Troy says, I'm playing soundtracks from a mini disc player into a Bose LT1 Model 11 tower system. Both operate at 48K. I have been recording my tracks at 44.1 on my 24-track Roland. Should I change it to 48K? Will it make any difference? In short, no. First off, if you're streaming, it only matters if you're streaming digitally from the mini disc to the Bose. If it has digital inputs, then that'll make a difference. If you're just using analog inputs, then the sample rate really doesn't matter. As far as 48 versus 44.1, the difference would be subtle. And I am of the persuasion that the higher the sample rate really doesn't make a big difference for home studio guys. Everything is oversampled anyway. It's actually being sampled at the megabyte level, and it's just getting downsampled to whatever sample rate you pick, be it 44.1 or 48. So to me, that's not a big deal, not something to worry about. The next question comes from Shorty B. Says, first off, I really enjoy your videos, very informative and easy to learn from. He says, I see that you have a 003 factory. I'm using the Inbox 2 and looking to one day soon upgrade to a 003 factory. I've not seen any in-depth videos anywhere about the 003 factory. Is it possible you could do a detailed video of it working with Pro Tools? You know, I do want to review the 003 at some point. It's a great control surface and interface. It's just a bigger endeavor. It would take a couple of days to do, I think, to give it justice. So that's why I haven't done it yet. But good question, and I definitely recommend it. It's a cool piece. John writes, I'm a live engineer for the U.S. Navy in the Navy Band in Memphis, and I've recently, within the last year or two, gotten a Pro Tools system, 003 Rack Plus with LE 7.4. A lot of times, the audio I'm importing via an Alesis HD24 is all lined up from the start to finish, etc., but since I record from live shows, many of the tempos fluctuate. Is there a way to use a click track, Beat Detective, or Elastic Time to straighten some of these issues out? I know I can do it the hard way by chopping the waveform up, moving things around, but that's pretty intensive. I only use Pro Tools to mix slash edit. While I am a musician, I don't record myself or others, nor do I do loops, so I have no need to start a session with a click, etc. If there's a way to do it, I think a video on the subject would be way cool. All of my Pro Tools knowledge has come from reading books and just generally playing with the program. Thanks for your help, John. Well, John, that's a great question, and good to hear from a fellow Tennessean. The bigger question I would ask is, do you really need to change the tempo? Because if it's recorded live, then there's really no reason. If they fluctuate in tempo, as long as they're all together and playing tightly, then I don't see any reason to fix the tempo and to make it one straight tempo. Now, if they're sloppy, then I would go in and I would edit those manually. If the bass comes in early on a part, or the guitar is just not quite syncing up with the drum kit as well as you'd like, that's where I go in and do what's called pocketing. Well, I'll go in and actually edit those out and make them more in time and make the performance tighter. But no, there's not really an easy way to do this. You can try Elastic Audio and it will quantize audio, but it's not flawless, and I really don't see a point unless you're just wanting to make some very minute edits to the timing. But changing the tempo of a song, I really don't see a point in doing that. Okay. T-Bone says, I am getting a laptop that has Windows 7, and it's supposed to be pretty fast. It's an HP, it's around $800. But I was wondering if it would be good enough to run Pro Tools and whatnot. I have an older laptop, and it's slow and hard to record, and he has an outboard digital recorder he's been using. It's a Pavilion laptop with an AMD processor. You know, T-Bone, I don't know. I know Windows 7 seems to be working fairly well with Pro Tools. As far as that laptop, I couldn't tell you. You'll have to go to DigiDesign's website. They have a list of processors that will and won't work. I can't remember if the AMD is one that does or not. But if you're spending $800, I would just go ahead and spend another couple hundred and get a MacBook, because that will work with Pro Tools for sure. The thing with laptops and HPs and Gateways and Dells and all of those is they're not made for this. They're really geared towards being email machines, internet machines, word processor machines. So not really designed to go in and do a lot of audio. That's why you're having issues you're having with your current laptop. So getting another one that's $800 may not solve your problems. I would say get a Mac, because Pro Tools works on the Mac and they're all basically the same. You're not talking about 100 different manufacturers that make Macs. We're talking one. So if you can do that, that's what I would do. Next question is from Greg. He says, my iMac keeps saying that my volume cannot be designated as an audio record volume because it's not valid audio volume. I did everything you said from the video you posted on changing the transfer to record, but it won't let me help. In case you don't know what he's talking about, in Pro Tools, in the workspace window, I believe, if you go in, there's a place to see your hard drives and to change them from transfer, which is what they sometimes default to record, which actually allows you to record audio. You know, Greg, as far as what you're talking about, it could be that your drive just isn't compatible. And if that's the case, you may just need a different one. Again, you can go back to DigiDesign's website and check to see if your drive is compatible. It could be the chipset of the drive that doesn't work well with Pro Tools. You may just need to reformat the drive. Those are two things I would try. Caleb writes, I'm looking into getting a FireWire interface. My dad is looking to get one as well. While he prefers USB, I prefer FireWire. I was wondering what your opinion were of the two types of connections and the pros and cons of each. By the way, love the podcast. Best one out there by far. I guess he means blog, because I don't really do a podcast until, say, today. Anyway, Caleb, that's a great question. USB versus FireWire. Some will tell you one's better than another. It's not really the case. The difference mainly is that most interfaces out there are USB 1.0, whereas USB 2.0, which is about the same speed as FireWire, is not as common in interfaces. So the big reason people go with FireWire is for the channel count. You can get a lot more channels going in and out of a single FireWire cable than you can a USB 1.1 cable. If you're doing something simple like two inputs, two outputs, like an inbox, for example, that's why it's USB, because you don't need the extra bandwidth for more channels because you're only needing two inputs and two outputs. That said, USB is a bit slower. It has what's called latency, which means it takes a little more time for it to send the audio into the computer, process it, and send it back out for you to listen to it. So when you're recording, you may hear a delay. Now, for most USB boxes, they put a mix knob on there, which allows you to compensate for that by listening directly off the box before it goes into the computer. That can be annoying to some people. They would rather just not have to deal with that, and that's where FireWire is a little better. It's faster than USB 1.1. So typically, if you just lower your buffer setting in Pro Tools, then you don't have to worry about the issues of latency as much. So those are the two, and it really, the bigger question is just what do you need as far as inputs and outputs? That's what you should ask yourself, and then once you determine that, pick an interface that kind of meets those needs. All right, Chris says, after reading your articles on mixing drums, a question popped into my head. You mentioned in this article that if you want to compress the entire mix, you can record all the separate tracks to an aux track and apply compression there. This seems like an alternate route to having an effects track. My question is, how do I record separate tracks to another track? Is it just routing technique, or do you actually press record? Thanks. Chris, I think you may have misunderstood me just a little bit. I believe what you're referring to is when you bus, if you wanted to bus all of your drum tracks through a single effect, such as a compression on the entire drum kit. I'm not talking about recording that to a new track. That would be a waste of time. I simply just mean you route those to a bus or to an aux track. So you set up an aux track, route all of the tracks through that aux, and then put the plug in there. That way that compression happens to all of those tracks. You're not recording. You can't record to an aux track. It's simply a pass-through track that allows you to do things to the audio before it goes on to the next phase, whether it's your outputs or some other plug-in, things like that. Let's see. Mike says, I'm 17 and just recently received my first real piece of recording gear, a Fostex MR8 Mark II digital multi-tracker with two MXL condenser mics. Cool. The mics I have are decent, and I like the Fostex because it's easy to use, but I was wondering if there's anything you would recommend me getting so that I really get my home studio going. Any advice at all would be greatly appreciated. Well, Mike, that's a good question. You're off to a good start. You've got a recorder and a couple condenser mics. You do need good monitors to listen and to mix. You need acoustic treatment so your room sounds good. All sorts of things. And I cover all of these in my home studio necessities article series and ebook. So you can just go, if you just do a search on the site for 12 home studio necessities, you can read through. There's 13 articles there that go through everything you need for a studio. So I would definitely check that out. Franklin writes, he wants to wish me a happy new year, which is great. He says, the thing is that I have an analog console, a Ramsa WRT820B. I also have a Focusrite Octopre LE and a DAW Digi-003. Sometimes I get confused in how to approach my mixes. I want to be able to EQ in the board as well as panning to get the full sound from the board and also be able to send a nice mix to the headphone while recording. If you can help me, that would definitely change my life. That's awesome. Franklin, I don't know much about the Ramsa board, to be honest with you. I would question whether you really need to go through the board to get the full sound that you want. There are hundreds and thousands of people getting really good full mixes from Pro Tools. They're keeping everything completely in the box using plugins and getting a good sound. While an outboard mixer is great, and I'm not saying you shouldn't use that, I would just question to whether it's really necessary. You sound like you may be a little more of a beginner as far as recording goes, and that's great. And I think using a mixer may confuse you more or add more complexity that you maybe don't need. Perhaps right now you should just focus on the recording and getting good mixes inside the box, and then maybe you can expand later. But just going through an outboard mixer is not going to make it sound better. Your ears and your skill is what makes it sound good. So the gear is somewhat irrelevant from that point. All right, Reggie says, I have a PC running Windows XP using programs such as Fruity Loops, Adobe Audition, Cool Edit Pro, and Sony Acid Pro, all recording. And he also has a Samson MDR6 mixer and a Tascam US-122. What I'm trying to do is run the microphones, mixer, and Tascam at once, but I don't know how to do it. I want to plug the microphone into the mixer, the mic 1 slot, so that I can do some pre-mixing, but it's like the PC doesn't record it when I do this, even though I see evidence of the mic being picked up through the mixer and Tascam. Then when I try to plug it into the Tascam, the mixer settings do not affect what's coming out of the microphone. I need to know what I need to do to hook this up in order for it to work properly because I'm going to purchase a condenser microphone for more serious recording, but I want to use the pre-mixing from the mixer when I do so. Reggie, I really don't think you need to do any pre-mixing. The Samson mixer is not a good mixer in the sense of it's going to add a lot to your sound. It's a cheap mixer, and it's not really geared to be something that's going to sound great. So I don't mean to be confrontational or to kind of dodge the question, but I say record the microphone as pure as possible. Go straight into the interface, and you can do all your mixing afterwards. Pre-mixing, again, I don't even know what that means. It could mean you want to EQ it before it goes in. And that's all well and good. And if you had a really nice preamp and a really nice EQ, that would make sense. But something cheap like the Samson, it really is going to hurt your sound to go through that and then go through the Tascam. Whereas I think just going straight into the Tascam is going to be a better sound overall. And you can always EQ in the mix. Reggie has another question. He says, I want to use Pro Tools, and he wants to know if the M-Audio Black Box would work. If I do use this black box, how would I go about connecting a condenser along with a mixer like the MDR6? Again, yes, the black box will work with Pro Tools M-powered. I've not used the black box very much. It's mainly, I believe it's for guitarists, and it's pretty cheap. So I don't know if it even has phantom power for a microphone. So you need something with phantom power or 48 volts. That's what you need to focus on. I would look at something like a Fastrack Pro for what you're doing, not the black box. Okay. Roger says, is it possible to move a region in spot mode to a new location while maintaining the original location? I try holding down the option button while pressing OK in the spot dialog window. Thanks, Roger. Roger, there's no reason to do that. Just go to slip mode, hold down option, and drag it elsewhere. That'll make a copy of the region. Then if you need to spot it to a very specific location, then go into spot mode, click on the new region, and that should put it wherever you want to go. Peter, with a little bit longer email, says, "Hi, Joe. I think people have been waiting for a site like this for a long time, myself included." Well, thank you. And he says, "There seems to be a shortage of info for people who are just starting out down the home studio path. With the help of yourself in this site, I think a lot of us will find it easier to do." Well, cool. That's the whole reason I do it. His question is, he has a laptop, an Ibanez guitar, a Pod X3, a Carlsbro 50-watt amp, a Behringer foot controller, an M-Audio KeyStation 88, and a microphone. And he says, "I am in the near future hoping to buy a pair of active studio monitors and a Korg pad control. I have no idea if the correct way of connecting these things together, and also I need to buy anything else in order to do this. I would be eternally grateful if you would help in this matter. Maybe a diagram would help. Keep up the great work, and all the best in the new year." Well, Pete, thanks for the kind words. Really appreciate that. Let's see, you're looking to get active studio monitors and a Korg pad control. Well, the Korg pad control just plugs in via USB, so there's no real magic there. Studio monitors would just plug into your interface. So the bigger question is, you need an audio interface. Right now, I'm not sure what you're connecting your microphone into or your guitar. If you're recording through the pod, I suppose you could just plug into the outputs of the pod. But it's not a really great recording device. I would get something for recording itself, an audio interface. Now, I've got some articles on the website about that. Do a search for audio interface, and you can see my thoughts on that. But that's the direction you should be looking first, and then I think the rest will make more sense. So audio interface, something from M-Audio, Presonus, those guys would be great. If you want to use Pro Tools, getting an M-Box would be a great option. So that's the direction I would look. Thanks, Pete. Scott writes, "Hi, Joe. Love the website. My question is, which microphone cable do you feel offers the best quality and sound-to-cost ratio? I'm about a year into setting up a home studio mainly for drum tracking. I've been adding things that I feel would make the greatest impact. The other night, I picked up a hum in my kick channel out of my ISA 428. I found just moving the cable around a little solved the issue. As with most of us, my rack holds the power supply along with the rack gear, so all my power cables are very close to mic cables. So what's your take on microphone cables? Thanks for your thoughts." Well, Scott, I think there's a lot of differing opinions out there. For your example, actually, I think probably what's happening is that cable is just simply a bad cable. It just went bad. So if moving the cable causes the issues to go away, there's probably a short in the cable itself. As far as brands of cable, I try to tell folks to stay away from things like the cheaper anything, Radio Shack, Hosa. They all have cheaper options that are like $7 for a cable. And you think, great, a $7 cable, but it's a $7 cable. It's not going to A, sound good, and it's B, not going to last very long. I do like brands like Proco and Monster. Monster are great, and I think you just need to kind of match it to your gear. You've got an ISA 428, so a couple of Monster cables might be a good deal. Otherwise, brands like Proco are great. Mogami's out there, which is good too. And I tend to use mostly Proco because it's a little more cost-effective, but I've got a few Monsters as well. And I would encourage you to maybe buy one Monster, one Proco, and try them out. You can always return the one you don't like, or if you don't think the Monster's worth the money, you can return that as well. So that's what I would do. Let's see. This one's from Cornell, and it says he's from South Africa, which is very cool. I have just a few short questions for you. It would be great if you could help me because I'm really new to this. Firstly, I'm interested in buying an EMU 1616M PCIe audio interface. Will I be able to connect a 5.1 speaker system to it? If so, my entire band is digital / electric, drums, guitar, mics. If I connect them to the unit, can we use the unit as sort of a PA system to play all the instruments through? Okay, let me answer those questions first before I go on to the rest. First off, will it connect to a 5.1 speaker system? I don't know. I've not seen the 1616M in a while. I don't believe it has enough outputs. A 5.1 system is 6 channels. So unless it has 6 outputs, then no, you can't plug it into a 5.1 system. As far as can you use it as a PA system, I suppose you could use it as a virtual digital mixer, but I don't know how good that's going to work depending on latency and things like that. So you'll have to adjust your levels with a mouse, and I don't know if that's going to be the most ideal scenario, but you could use it as a virtual mixer. And let's see, lastly, how many inputs can the unit accommodate? In other words, what's the maximum instruments, mics I can connect? To be honest with you, Cornell, I don't know. It's as simple as just looking at the box itself. However many connectors it has, that's how many inputs and outputs it has. I actually just pulled it up here at Sweetwater. It's got two microphone inputs, two SPDIF inputs, and then ADAT. So ADAT can handle 8 channels. So if you had some sort of an 8 channel preamp of sorts, you could bring 8 channels through there, 2 via SPDIF, and then 2 more via the mic inputs. And it says on here that it's a 16 input, 16 output system. So if you have more specific questions on that, call Sweetwater or somebody like that. They'll be able to help you and sell you the right thing. This question is from Gil. It says, "Hi, I have an Inbox 2 Pro Tools LE8 and a Roland Phantom X6. I've connected my Phantom X6 to my Xbox with MIDI and audio cables, MIDI in to out and out to in. I think he meant Inbox, not Xbox. So I create a MIDI track and then click R. Then I can turn the volume or can move the volume up and down, which tells me that I have connected my Phantom correctly. However, after I record, I see that it is recorded. When I play back, I can't hear anything. I really can't see the problem. Please help me. Also, if I hook up my microphone, I can see on my audio track that the volume goes up and down, but it's so little. So when I record, the volume is too low, and I can't seem to make the volume go up when I max my input mix knob on my Xbox, or Inbox, I think is what he means. Gil, you need to call tech support, buddy. I don't really know what's going on. You may have your mix knob turned all the way the wrong way. Hit play when you record something and turn the mix knob back and forth and see if you can hear something then." This message is from Dirty Dingo. Says, "Hey Joe, I was reading your article about offline processing. You mentioned DSP devices such as the Liquid Mix. I saw Liquid Mix a while back and I don't understand what it does or how it's used. Could you explain DSP devices in more detail and how they are used? I don't understand their use at all. I have a very slow CPU, very old computer that I exclusively use for Pro Tools. Would this help me on plugin usage for my slow computer?" Well, a DSP device is something that offloads processing from your computer. So the Liquid Mix, for example, from Focusrite, you plug it in via FireWire, and then you install the plugins on your computer. So you pull up a track and you put a plugin on that track. If you pick one that goes off to the Focusrite, then it, from a computer standpoint, you don't notice any difference. It's simply you just use the plugin. But behind the scenes, what's happening is instead of your computer processor processing that audio, it actually sends it out via FireWire to the Liquid Mix, and the Liquid Mix does the work. So if you've got a slower computer, like you said, where you're getting a lot of clicks and pops, and or it's just dropping out a lot, or it's just giving you that message that says, "I can't process this audio, you know, raise your buffer size," and your buffer size is maxed out, it's just your computer's too slow, something like the Liquid Mix might help. That said, a newer computer would also, in essence, do the same thing. So just kind of depends on where you are with that. Let's see. Carl from Argentina says, "I'm going to start to record my album soon. I need to know what EQ, compressors, reverbs, delays do you recommend as the best?" He goes on to describe his music, and he says he's going to try some Waves plugins, etc. To be honest, Carl, I don't think there's any that are better than others per se. I use a couple of Waves bundles, the Waves Gold bundle and the SSL bundle. But to be completely honest, you can make a great album with just the included plugins. That's a matter of, like I said before, you using your ears as opposed to expecting a plugin to make it sound better. So you can get a great recording with whatever you use. But yes, I do like Waves quite a bit. Mike says, "Hi, Joe. First, I'd like to say what a helpful website this is. Very refreshing to see. Awesome. He is about to turn a brand new garden shed into a home studio and wants some advice on acoustics. Is Zero Echo classed as perfect acoustics? I was thinking of carpeting the walls of the studio shed to make this as close as possible, or would traps be better as they allow for a slight mirror?" I guess he means reflection. Well, you don't want the room to be completely dead. The vocal booths are completely dead, but mixing rooms are not. So you don't want it to be completely zero as far as there's no reflections. It just doesn't sound natural. No one that listens to your music is going to be in a completely soundproof environment either. So there's really no point in completely soundproofing it. What you want to do is just knock out some of the early reflections by putting foam in the mirror points where the sound will be bouncing off and coming to your ears. You also want to put some bass traps in the corners and maybe some diffusers around, all things like that. If you're reading this before Tuesday, January 19th, we're going to have a webinar that night that you should attend. So I'll put a link to the blog post here We're having an expert, Gavin Haverstick, is going to be talking about acoustic treatment. Brilliant guy. Definitely will be really helpful. Let's see. Shorty B has a couple more questions. When he records MIDI, sometimes unwanted sustain takes place. When I erase the sustain part and record it over, the sustain is still there. How do you fix this? Well, in MIDI, there's a separate place to see your sustain information, because MIDI is just a bunch of information. You're looking at note information, but if you do a little searching, you'll see that there's a view that you can look at that shows you all the sustain information. So when you go in there, you'll see the sustain is still there. You got to go in and delete that. Second question, how can you connect external MIDI devices like sound modules, like a Motif rack or a Phantom rack, to run through Pro Tools at the same time so I don't have to keep switching cables? You just have to have enough inputs. If you don't have enough inputs to have them all connected at once, there's really nothing you can do. You can maybe try some sort of external mixer to mix all those together and then feed all of those into your inputs on your inbox. Otherwise, you'll just need to get a bigger interface or keep swapping out cables. Another question from Shorty B about the 003 factory. Looks like it's just the same question he'd asked before about doing it in depth. So that's coming. It's not a priority for me right now. I've got other things I want to write about, but I'll probably get to it at some point. Hafizi says, I have trouble doing my own mastering. His song has loose... Sorry, his English is a little bad. My song has loose, it's dynamic, something like the snare hit suddenly here, like the crack is fading. I was trying to boost the level, and he can't get the level of the song that he's wanting to. I'm sorry, I just don't really understand the question. I guess he's talking about mastering. Sorry, Hafizi, I just don't really understand what you're asking there, buddy. Here's another question. And that one is very, very, very long. I'm not going to cover that one right now. Very long. All right. So we're getting close to the end of the light at the end of the tunnel here. Addy says he likes the website. He uses Sonar 8 and wants to know if I'm going to do workshops in Pro Tools. Any nice websites that's similar to mine for Sonar? Okay, he's asking, am I only going to be working with Pro Tools? Well, I don't know any good Sonar websites out there. I do Pro Tools. That's what I use. I don't use Sonar, so I can't really do any videos on that. So I don't know. Hopefully somebody out there is doing it, though. Craig asks, hi, Joe. With the recording studio business being a bit off the beaten path in terms of traditional marketing, I was wondering if you had any suggested ways or effective ways to advertise and increase studio business. I've been charged for building our daytime clientele since the owner has another gig and only works the studio evenings and weekends. Thanks in advance, Craig. Well, Craig, I did this a little bit a few months ago working for a studio. And it's not easy. You're right. If this is an actual business, then you should probably have time to do some effective marketing. Get involved with social media. That's a big one. Use Craigslist to post about yourself. You can always connect with people there. And the biggest thing is just going to where the musicians are. You're going to have to get out there a couple nights a week and go find bands and go to their shows and then interact with them and hopefully get some business that way. I don't think from a straight just sitting back and putting ads out there, you're going to get much business. I think it's all about connections and who you know. I think that's going to be much more effective than any sort of an ad you can put up. All right. Michael says, I have been obsessed. He says that's the only way to describe it with music since I can remember. I'm 19 now, and I have been playing drums since age 10, guitar at 12, and fiddle with bass, keys, and vocals since 16 or 17. I've recorded numerous experiments on an old Fostex recorder beginning at age 14, but have advanced to things like GarageBand and Pro Tools. And I really enjoy the marriage of analog/digital consoles, as well as the blend of acoustic, electric, and MIDI instruments. Anyhow, I have the dream... or possible reality of making a living in music since I could talk. And I'm wondering if you could give me a glimpse into the life of a professional musician. I know I have the talent. I've played with numerous people of every age in varying genres in different places, and I'm confident that I can meet expectations. I just don't have a clue what to do. I'm in the process of making a demo of my original songs to send to companies, but I'm not sure if I would do great as a frontman. I've learned to play several instruments by myself, and I would love to find a job in Nashville or a similar location as a session musician, but I don't even know where to start. Anything you can provide is a tremendous help. Thanks, and have a good one. Michael, that's a great question. I don't know where you are. similar to the last question, if you're wanting to market yourself as a musician, you just got to get out there. You can't sit at home and send out resumes or send out emails and letters and expect someone to contact you. That's not going to happen. I'm not sure where you live. If you're wanting to do something like play in Nashville, I'd say move to Nashville, get a job, and just start going to shows and meeting people and networking. As far as getting a job as a session musician, that's a big, tall order, and I'm not going to be one of those that says it can't happen, but you have to have connections. It doesn't matter how good you are. If you're not good at marketing yourself, then there's really no point. So get out there, meet as many people as you can, and if you're as good as you say you are, then you'll start to get some opportunities once people can hear you, but you just got to get out there. And treat it like a business. Don't expect people to give you any handouts, and just keep pursuing it. Matthias says, I'm planning to make a very small home recording studio. What do you think about this gear? Alesis IO2, M-Audio Oxygen 49, Behringer C3. I have a guitar, bass, and some keyboards, but I plan to use the Oxygen as a MIDI keyboard too. I'm on a tight budget. Do I have to get a sound card for the computer, or the interface takes its role for the audio processing? Thank you. Everything sounds good. I'm not familiar with the Behringer C3. I'm not terribly fond of Behringer in general. I think you could probably do a little bit better for your money, but you do need an audio interface. I think the C3 is a condenser microphone. So, I'm sorry. You said you want the Alesis IO2, which is an audio interface. Yeah, that's great. You still need software. So if you're wanting to use something like Pro Tools, then you should go a different direction. But if the Alesis is what you want, then that's certainly a great way to go. I'm not as concerned with what gear you use as long as you're making music. You can always improve later once you've learned how to do things. Joseph asks, I just recently got M-Audio's Fast Track Ultra 8R so I could record 8 tracks at once. After working with this and creating a 3-track demo, I was trying to find the best techniques for punching in drums. It seems punching in always results in cymbals being cut off awkwardly. Even crossfades don't seem to help too much. Do you know, if so, if you can explain any techniques for punching in on drums or for recording section by section? Before this 3-track demo, I have never recorded drums section by section, just all in one take. Then I decided I should start learning, and I just can't seem to figure out a good way of doing it and making it seem like a continuous take without cutting reverberations, cymbals, or overtones off. Thanks for any help. Well, Joseph, I don't mean to dodge your question, but I think you're focusing on the wrong thing. I'm not sure why you're wanting to record in sections. That's okay for things like vocals and guitars and things like that, but for drums, it just doesn't make sense for the reasons that you mentioned. What I would do is simply record full takes and do 3 or 4 takes and then comp those together and use editing to comp between the sections. That's not to say you can't record section by section. I think you can. And I think your editing points aren't good. If you're editing right in the middle of a crash cymbal, then of course it's not going to sound right. You need to use something like Quick Punch and record a little bit before the section starts and a little bit after, and then just move your regions around or the edit point around until you get a spot that's nice fluid transition from one region to the next. It's just a thing. You just got to practice and try it, man. There's not really a secret. Gaime says, I have a project where I can see the waves on the track and I see that they're playing, but I don't hear them. They're not muted and the output is to the right channel. I'm clueless. I'm clueless too. I would call your tech support and see what's going on. Sounds like there's a problem. Wayne wants to know how thick my acoustic treatment tiles are. They're probably about 1 or 2 inches thick. I think they're 2 inches. They're wedges, so they kind of go from very, very thin to about 2 inches thick, so it kind of ranges. And okay, I think that those are all the questions. So if you stuck with me through this whole recording, I appreciate it. For all of you who asked questions, thank you for your questions. Keep those coming. I'll continue to answer. And thanks for being a part of Home Studio Corner. We will see you again soon. Oh.